Chapter 56. Apparently with a severe cold in his head, I beg, you won't. Apostrophe, and this fellow, apostrophe, exclaimed Lammel, stopping and making the most of his chest. This fellow presumes on my having selected him out of all the young fellows I know, for an advantageous opportunity. This fellow presumes on my having in my desk round the corner, his dirty note of hand for a wretched sum payable on the occurrence of a certain event, which event can only be of my and my wife's bringing about. This fellow, Fledgeby, presumes to be impertinent to me, Lammel. Give me your nose, sir. Apostrophe, no. Stop. I beg your pardon, apostrophe, said Fledgeby, with humility. What do you say, sir? Apostrophe, demanded Mr. Lammel, seeming too furious to understand. I beg your pardon, apostrophe, repeated Fledgeby. Repeat your words louder, sir. The just indignation of a gentleman has sent the blood boiling to my head. I don't hear you. Apostrophe, I say, apostrophe, repeated Fledgeby, with laborious explanatory politeness, I beg your pardon. Apostrophe, Mr. Lammel paused. As a man of honor, apostrophe, said he, throwing himself into a chair, I am disarmed. Apostrophe, Mr. Fledgeby also took a chair, though less demonstratively, and by slow approaches, removed his hand from his nose. Some natural diffidence assailed him, as to blowing it, so shortly after its having assumed a personal and delicate, not to say public, character. But he overcame his scruples by degrees, and modestly took that liberty under an implied protest. Lammel, apostrophe, he said sneakingly, when that was done, I hope we are friends again? Apostrophe, Mr. Fledgeby, apostrophe, returned Lammel, say no more. Apostrophe, I must have gone too far in making myself disagreeable, apostrophe, said Fledgeby, but I never intended it. Apostrophe, say no more. Apostrophe, Mr. Lammel repeated in a magnificent tone. Give me your Fledgeby started hand. Apostrophe, they shook hands, and on Mr. Lammel's part, in particular, there ensued great geniality. For, he was quite as much of a dastard as the other, and had been in equal danger of falling into the second place for good, when he took heart just in time to act upon the information conveyed to him by Fledgeby's eye. The breakfast ended in a perfect understanding. Incessant machinations were to be kept at work by Mr. and Mrs. Lammel, love was to be made for Fledgeby, and conquest was to be ensured to him, he on his part very humbly admitting his defects as to the softer social arts, and entreating to be backed to the utmost by his two able coadjutors. Little recked Mr. Podsnap of the traps and toils besetting his young person. He regarded her as safe within the temple of Podsnapery, hiding the fullness of time when she, Georgina, should take him, Fitz Podsnap, who with all his worldly goods should her endow. It would call a blush into the cheek of his standard young person to have anything to do with such matters save to take as directed, and with worldly goods, as per settlement to be endowed. Who giveth this woman, to be married to this man? I, Podsnap. Perish the daring thought that any smaller creation should come between. It was a public holiday, and Fledgeby did not recover his spirits, or his usual temperature of nose until the afternoon. Walking into the city in the holiday afternoon, he walked against a living stream setting out of it, and thus, when he turned into the precincts of Street Mary Axe, he found a prevalent repose and quiet there. A yellow overhanging plaster-fronted house at which he stopped was quiet too. The blinds were all drawn down, and the inscription Pupsy and Company seemed to doze in the counting house window on the ground floor giving on the sleepy street. Fledgeby knocked and rang, and Fledgeby rang and knocked, but no one came. Fledgeby crossed the narrow street and looked up at the house windows, but nobody looked down at Fledgeby. He got out of temper, crossed the narrow street again, and pulled the house bell, as if it were the house's nose, and he were taking a hint from his late experience. His ear at the keyhole seemed then, at last, to give him assurance that something stirred within. His eye at the keyhole seemed to confirm his ear, for he angrily pulled the house's nose again, and pulled and pulled and continued to pull, until a human nose appeared in the dark doorway. "Now you, sir!" " cried Fledgeby. "These are nice games." " He addressed an old Jewish man in an ancient coat, long of skirt, and wide of pocket. A venerable man, bald and shining at the top of his head, and with long gray hair flowing down at its sides and mingling with his beard. A man who with a graceful Eastern action of homage bent his head, and stretched out his hands with the palms downward, as if to deprecate the wrath of a superior. "What have you been up to?" " said Fledgeby, storming at him. "Generous Christian master," " urged the Jewish man, "it being holiday, I looked for no one." " Holiday," he blowed. " said Fledgeby, entering. "What have you got to do with holidays? Shut the door." " With his former action the old man obeyed. In the entry, hung his rusty large-brimmed low-crowned hat, as long out of date as his coat. In the corner near it stood his staff, no walking stick, but a veritable staff. Fledgeby turned into the counting house, perched himself on a business stool, and cocked his hat. There were light boxes on shelves, in the counting house, and strings of mock beads hanging up. There were samples of cheap clocks, and samples of cheap vases of flowers. Foreign toys, all. Perched on the stool with his hat cocked on his head and one of his legs dangling, the youth of Fledgeby hardly contrasted to advantage with the age of the Jewish man as he stood with his bare head bowed, and his eyes, which he only raised in speaking, on the ground. His clothing was worn down to the rusty hue of the hat in the entry, but though he looked shabby he did not look mean. Now, Fledgeby, though not shabby, did look mean. "You have not told me what you were up to, you sir," " said Fledgeby, scratching his head with the brim of his hat. "Sir, I was breathing the air." " In the cellar, that you didn't hear? On the housetop. Upon my soul. That's a way of doing business. " The old man represented with a grave and patient air, "there must be two parties to the transaction of business, and the holiday has left me alone. Can't be buyer and seller too. That's what the Jews say, ain't it? At least we say truly, if we say so," answered the old man with a smile. "Your people need speak the truth sometimes, for they lie enough," remarked Fascination Fledgeby. "Sir, there is," returned the old man with quiet emphasis, "too much untruth among all denominations of men." Fascination Fledgeby took another scratch at his intellectual head with his hat, to guy in time for rallying. "For instance," he resumed, as though it were he who had spoken last, "who but you and I ever heard of a poor Jew?" "The Jews," said the old man, raising his eyes from the ground with his former smile. "They hear of poor Jews often, and are very good to them." "Bother that." Returned Fledgeby. "You know what I mean. You'd persuade me if you could, that you are a poor Jew. I wish you'd confess how much you really did make out of my late governor. I should have a better opinion of you." The old man only bent his head, and stretched out his hands as before. "Don't go on posturing like a deaf and dumb school," said the ingenious Fledgeby, "but express yourself like a Christian, or as nearly as you can." "I had had sickness and misfortunes, and was so poor," said the old man, "as hopelessly to owe the father, principal and interest. The son inheriting, was so merciful, as to forgive me both, and place me here." He made a little gesture, as though he kissed the hem of an imaginary garment worn by the noble youth before him. It was humbly done, but picturesquely, and was not abasing to the doer. You won't say more, I see, apostrophe said Fledgeby, looking at him, as if he would like to try the effect of extracting a double tooth or two, and so it's of no use my putting it to you. But confess this, Raya, who believes you to be poor now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no one, apostrophe said the old man. There you're right, apostrophe assented Fledgeby. No one, apostrophe repeated the old man with a grave slow wave of his head. All scouted as a fable. Were I to say this little fancy business is not mine, apostrophe with a lithe sweep of his easily turning hand around him, to comprehend the various objects on the shelves, it is the little business of a Christian young gentleman who places me, his servant, in trust and charge here, and to whom I am accountable for every single bead, they would laugh. When, in the larger money business, I tell the borrowers apostrophe, I say, old chap, apostrophe apostrophe interposed Fledgeby, I hope you mind what you do tell them. Apostrophe, apostrophe, sir, I tell them no more than I am about to repeat. When I tell them, I cannot promise this, I cannot answer for the other, I must see my principal, I have not the money, I am a poor man, and it does not rest with me, they are so unbelieving and so impatient, that they sometimes curse me in Jehovah's name. Apostrophe, that's deuced good, that is. Apostrophe, apostrophe said fascination Fledgeby. And at other times they say, can it never be done without these tricks, Mr. Raya? Come, come, Mr. Raya, we know the arts of your people, my people. If the money is to be lent, fetch it, fetch it. If it is not to be lent, keep it and say so. They never believe me. Apostrophe, that's all right, apostrophe said fascination Fledgeby. They say, we know, Mr. Raya, we know. We have but to look at you, and we know. Apostrophe, oh, a good un are you for the post, apostrophe thought Fledgeby, and a good un was I to mark you out for it. I may be slow, but I am precious sure. Apostrophe, not a syllable of this reflection, shaped itself in any scrap of Mr. Fledgeby's breath, lest it should tend to put his servant's price up. But looking at the old man as he stood quiet with his bead bowed and his eyes cast down, he felt that to relinquish an inch of his baldness, an inch of his gray hair, an inch of his coat skirt, an inch of his hat brim, an inch of his walking staff, would be to relinquish hundreds of pounds. Look here, Raya, apostrophe said Fledgeby, mollified by these self-approving considerations. I want to go a little more into buying up queer bills. Look out in that direction. Apostrophe, sir, it shall be done. Apostrophe, casting my eye over the accounts, I find that branch of business pays pretty fairly, and I am game for extending it. I like to know people's affairs likewise. So look out. Apostrophe, sir, I will, promptly. Apostrophe, put it about in the right quarters, that you'll buy queer bills by the lump by the pound weight, if that's all supposing you see your way to a fair chance on looking over the parcel. And there's one thing more. Come to me with the books for periodical inspection as usual, at 8 on Monday morning. Apostrophe, Raya drew some folding tablets from his breast, and noted it down. That's all I wanted to say at the present time, apostrophe continued Fledgeby in a grudging vein, as he got off the stool, except that I wish you'd take the air, where you can hear the bell, or the knocker, either one of the two or both. By the by, how do you take the air at the top of the house? Do you stick your head out of a chimney pot? Apostrophe, sir, there are leads there, and I have made a little garden there. Apostrophe, to bury your money in, you old dodger? Apostrophe, apostrophe, a thumbnail space of garden would hold the treasure I bury, master, apostrophe said Raya. 12 shillings a week, even when they are an old man's wages, bury themselves. Apostrophe, I should like to know what you really are worth, apostrophe returned Fledgeby, with whom his growing rich on that stipend and gratitude was a very convenient fiction. But come, let's have a look at your garden on the tiles, before I go. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the old man took a step back and hesitated. Truly, sir, I have company there. Apostrophe, have you, by George? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Fledgeby. I suppose you happen to know whose premises these are? Apostrophe, apostrophe, sir, they are yours, and I am your servant in them. Apostrophe, oh. I thought you might have overlooked that, apostrophe, retorted Fledgeby, with his eyes on Riah's beard as he felt for his own. Having company on my premises, you know. Apostrophe, apostrophe, come up and see the guests, sir. I hope for your admission that they can do no harm. Apostrophe, passing him with a courteous reverence, specially unlike any action that Mr. Fledgeby could for his life have imparted to his own head and hands, the old man began to ascend the stairs. As he toiled on before, with his palm upon the stair rail, and his long black skirt, a very gabardine, overhanging each successive step, he might have been the leader in some pilgrimage of devotional ascent to a prophet's tomb. Not troubled by any such weak imagining, fascination, Fledgeby merely speculated on the time of life at which his beard had begun, and thought once more, what a good un he was for the part. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.